Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome to the program, 1-888-914-9149 is a toll-free line to call the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-9149. You can also email the show. The address is Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. And you can also follow me on Twitter. Message me there, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And the show account is at Cale Clark Show. Well, it is Wednesday. It is January the 26th, and it's a very special day for us here at Relevant Radio. As you know, this past Sunday, during the Sunday Angelus, Pope Francis was talking about how concerned he is, as we all are, for the situation of escalating tensions between the Ukraine and Russia. And he called for this day, today, the 26th of January, to be a day of prayer for peace. So we've been trying to respond as best we can to the Holy Father's request all day today, especially during the daily mass, which took place at noon central, as it does every day here on Relevant Radio, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, which happened just a short time ago, 3 p.m. central on the Drew Mariani Show, and of course, later this evening after this program, the Family Rosary Across America. We know that Father Rocky is going to make that a big intention for us tonight. So please tell your friends about this. The day's not over yet. We still have a lot of praying to do for this intention. And one of the things that I think is coming up a lot, and you might have heard your friends talking about this, and it's definitely coming up in this situation. I've seen chatter about this on social media. And from time to time, just in general, this comes up with respect to Russia. A lot of people ask the question, Our Lady of Fatima specifically requested that Russia be consecrated to her Immaculate Heart. And there's always been this lingering doubt or this lingering suspicion that the popes didn't do it right, that JP II, St. John Paul II, did not properly consecrate Russia to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. And they'll want to say, these people want to say, see, this is why we're in the situation that we're in right now. If that had been done right, this wouldn't be happening, this tension with Ukraine and all the issues that Russia is causing right now in the world. And so is that the case? Is that true? We're going to talk about that today on the Cale Clark Show. If you have a take on this, you can call in 888-914-9149. Well, someone who would know about this was Sister Lucia herself. She was one of the three shepherd children of Fatima. She first met Our Lady when she was 10 years old in 1917. It was while World War I was raging across Europe, and the Great War, the war to end all wars. Well, it really wasn't, as we know. Something even worse happened later, which was, of course, World War II. And she was interviewed on a very frequent basis by a retired cardinal of the Catholic Church. He's 87 years old now. But Cardinal Tarcisio Bertone, who was the Secretary of State at the Vatican, really, I guess you could say, and the Vatican, as you know, is kind of a nation state unto itself, if you will. And he would be, I guess, the equivalent of the Prime Minister of the Vatican at the time. And so he served, of course, under Pope Benedict XVI. And Sister Lucia herself passed away in 2005, and her canonization cause is ongoing. Pope Benedict waived the normal waiting period to look into her canonization process. And before she died, she gave several meetings, granted several audiences to Cardinal Tarcisio Bertone. He talked with her a lot about this issue, about whether or not the Pope did it right, whether John Paul II properly consecrated Russia to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. And let me just give you a little bit of background on this conversation. There's actually a book that came out, and it's really a book-length interview that was done with Cardinal Bertone with a journalist by the name of Giuseppe De Carli. He basically just, it was a lot like the interviews that were done with Pope Benedict that were turned into books such as The Ratzinger Report, 1986, God and the World. You might have read some of these really insightful interviews with Pope Benedict. Well, the same sort of thing was done with Cardinal Bertone in this book. And one of the things that Sister Lucia noted during her meetings with Our Lady, of course, was how stringently Our Lady wanted people to pray the rosary every single day to obtain peace in the world. And that's what we're doing here today on Relevant Radio, especially with the Family Rosary Across America coming up at 7 p.m. Central. But here's what Our Lady said. Pray the rosary every day to obtain peace in the world and the end of war. And Sister Lucia wrote about this. She wrote about this experience much later in her life. She wrote that, quote, Our Lady did not predict that we would have pleasures, earthly joys, honor, power, or material goods. And obviously she's speaking about herself and the other shepherd children of Fatima. Nor did she predict that we would become big, important people in this world, which is nothing but illusion, blindness, and vanity, and where every goal is sought with so much anguish, deceit, and injustice. And that's certainly true, excuse me, that people who do seek to become, quote-unquote, big, important people in the world, very often that search is tainted with, you know, blindness, vanity, anguish, deceit, injustice. Why do they want to do this? Here's what Our Lady said to Sister Lucia. Do you wish to offer yourselves to God? Will you bear all the sufferings he will send you in order to make reparation for the sins by which he is offended? Will you pray for the conversion of sinners? And of course, the children said in response to this, yes, we will. And Sister Lucia said this. It was with full awareness of this prediction of many sufferings that I pronounced my yes. And the Lord did not let us down, nor was his grace ever lacking, as Our Lady had promised. The grace of God will be your strength. And Sister Lucia lived a very, very quiet life in her convent in Portugal, in Coimbra, in Portugal. She didn't seek the spotlight for herself. She didn't seek to go on book tours or, you know, appear on Oprah's couch or anything like that. She was all about prayer and reparation for sin. And so she's a very credible saint in that regard. A lot of people who claim to have encountered Our Lady and they kind of hit the publicity trail after that, you kind of question their motives a little bit. You can't do that with Sister Lucia. But at any rate, Giuseppe De Carli, this author, interviewed Cardinal Bertone about a lot of different subjects with respect to Fatima, the last secret of Fatima, the revelation of that that was released by the Vatican a few years ago, sort of uncovered, unsealed. He also asked Cardinal Bertone about specifically whether or not the consecration to Russia was done correctly. And this is one of the things that, this is from the official Vatican text from the Fatima apparitions. Our Lady is quoted as saying this, when you see a night illumined by an unknown light, know that this is the great sign given you by God that he is about to punish the world for its crimes by means of war, famine, and persecutions of the Church and of the Holy Father. To prevent this, I shall come to ask for the consecration of Russia to my Immaculate Heart and the communion of reparation on the first Saturdays. And so Giuseppe De Carli, when he was asking Cardinal Bertone about this, he said, we know from contemporary newspaper reports that a spectacular aurora borealis occurred just before the outbreak of World War II. So that could have been the night illumined by an unknown light that Mary had talked about at Fatima. So that aurora borealis, these natural lights in the sky, like the northern lights, the famous northern lights, occurred just before the outbreak of World War II. But what else might Mary's dark and threatening words refer to? Perhaps Sister Lucia understood the phrase consecrate Russia in the sense of reconsecrating it, rather than simply erecting a bulwark against communist ideology or of converting the Soviet Union from atheism to Catholicism. In any case, the third secret of Fatima stipulates the consecration of Russia as the condition upon whose fulfillment a period of peace will be granted to the world. Now, a lot of people dream of a Catholic Russia. And so Giuseppe De Carli said, "This dream brings me to a controversy about the validity of the consecration ceremony the Pope performed in response to Our Lady's request. In October of 2000, the statue of Our Lady of Fatima traveled to Rome, and John Paul II read out an act of entrustment, before the image. However, he did not explicitly mention Russia, which by that time was no longer communist." Now, he had done this twice before as well, by the way. In his two earlier acts of entrustment, he performed in 1982 and in 1984, respectively. The consecration of Russia obviously posed a very, very tricky religio-political problem for Pope John Paul II. The Pope, not wishing to offend the sensibilities of our separated brethren, the Orthodox, remained cautious. End of quote. I just want to stop right there for a second because it's very true that Pope John Paul II, as all the popes have been of all time, not just of recent vintage, but the ecumenical movement we just got finished with, the week of prayer for Christian unity, the conversion of St. Paul, the feast day that we celebrated yesterday. We talked a lot about that yesterday here on the Cale Clark Show. That's what you're listening to right now on Relevant Radio. You can call in 888-914-9149. Pope John Paul II obviously released a document called Ut Unum Sint, that they all might be one. The words of Jesus himself in John 17. And he asked the Orthodox churches of the East, he asked Protestant Christians, "Hey, how can the papacy serve you? I want to get you guys on board here. We need to have corporate reunion within Christianity." And so it was kind of a plea for work with me here, basically. Well, you know what the response was? Absolute crickets. Nobody responded to him, which I think is incredibly depressing. But having said that, according to this writer, and his name again is Giuseppe De Carli, he said that the Pope did not want to offend the sensibilities of the separated brethren, specifically the Orthodox churches of the East. And JP2 did spend a lot of time doing outreach with them. And so De Carli says an explicit consecration to Russia would have been received by the Patriarch of Moscow, the Russian Orthodox Church, the Patriarch of Moscow, and his name was Alexei, not Alexa, you know, like Alexa, turn on the lights. No, Alexei II, who was the Patriarch of Moscow and all Russia at the time. If the Pope had consecrated Russia to the Immaculate Heart of Mary using that specific language, that would have been seen by the Russian Patriarch as a declaration of kind of ecclesiastical war of sorts. So what this journalist did, Giuseppe De Carli, was he specifically asked Cardinal Bertone this question. Okay, JP2 made these acts of entrustment he didn't use the word Russia explicitly, but he made these acts of entrustment. So did any of them conform to Our Lady's wishes, what she specifically asked for at Fatima? That's a very good question. That's a very good question, especially in light of the events of these days. And here's how Cardinal Bertone responded at the time. I'm going to quote him in full here. Let me quote. This is Cardinal Bertone speaking. "I want to make it clear that Lucia didn't conceive of the consecration of Russia as a strategy for capturing this great Christian country for Catholicism. That wasn't the intent of the consecration, which was actually meant to help Russia return to its Christian heritage, to recover its identity as a nation devoted to Our Lady. Remember, the communist revolution had betrayed and violated Russia's Christian identity, using the might of the state to transform the country into a model of atheism. Although several popes had already entrusted the world to Mary, John Paul II wanted to comply fully with the request Our Lady had made at Fatima. To this end, he composed an act of entrustment, which he performed on June the 7th, 1981. He repeated it in Fatima in 1982. Then, spiritually united with all the world's bishops, he closed the holy year of the redemption, which was 1983-1984, with a revised version of the text of the act of entrustment. On March the 25th, 1984, the Feast of the Annunciation. It would be a good idea to reread this prayer of consecration because the mass media didn't entirely grasp its implications at the time. The act of entrustment was entirely in accord with what the Blessed Mother had asked for. Just take the sentence, and he's quoting here from the act of entrustment. Mother of the Church, enlighten especially the peoples whose consecration and entrustment by us you are awaiting. And that's the end of the quote from the act of entrustment of Pope John Paul II. And Cardinal Bertone went on to say, the reference to Russia is implicit, but it is there. It is there. End of quote. Okay, so now the question is this enough? The way that Pope John Paul II worded this act of entrustment, is this enough to satisfy Our Lady's wishes? Well, the key to the whole operation here is Sister Lucia herself. If anybody would know, as I said earlier, it would be her. Well, here's what Cardinal Bertone says next. Listen to this. He says, quote, Sister Lucia personally confirmed that this solemn consecration of the whole world did satisfy Mary's wishes. She said this, and here's her actual words from Sister Lucia. Yes, it has been performed as Our Lady requested on March the 25th, 1984. Lucia confirmed Mary's satisfaction in a letter that she sent to the Pope on November the 8th, 1989. Any debate about the validity of the act of entrustment or agitation for further acts of consecration has no leg to stand on. Now, it's true that Pope John Paul II did perform another act of entrustment in the year 2000, but that one was a prolongation. It was basically the same one that he had made in 1984. He just kind of elongated it a little bit. His intention was simply to throw the mantle of Mary's maternal protection over the beginning of the new millennium. So Russia has been consecrated, and the consecration was performed on March the 25th, 1984. End of quote. So that's a quote from Cardinal Bertone, who had several personal conversations and interactions with Sister Lucia, one of the Fatima seers, who died, of course, in 2005. So there you have it. As the Cardinal said, anybody who says the consecration wasn't done right, they really have no leg to stand on, because Lucia herself said, yeah, no, it was done right. And here's the thing. Lucia had ongoing conversations with Mary after the Fatima appearances, after these private revelations, of course, that the children had. She didn't talk about it that much. But this is another thing that Cardinal Bertone says in the book, that she, over the decades after Fatima, she had many apparitions, many more, visions, interlocutions from Our Lady. And this is all throughout the decades. And again, when people used to ask her, and this is another sign of the authenticity of it, when people used to ask her about this, you know, what's Our Lady telling you now? She would actually try to change the subject. She wouldn't really talk about it. She would prefer to remain silent. Now, that's real humility right there. And her prioress in the convent where she lived, who saw her every single day up close for decades, she came to the conclusion that Sister Lucia was constantly having visions. Like this was this was on the regular for her. And as Bertone said in the book, the cell of a Carmelite nun holds secrets that the rest of us will discover only in heaven. So it was an interesting chapter in the book. Sister Lucia wrote a lot of letters to Pope John Paul II. Bertone says, I don't know what the letters contained. There's a famous scene that occurred when JP2 and Sister Lucia met in Fatima on May the 13th in the year 2000. She handed the Pope an envelope, but nobody really knows what was in it. Bertone says he doesn't know either. So it's just absolutely fascinating. And so I think that that's, if you do hear any chatter about this over the next few days, as this international incident is obviously on everybody's minds, at the forefront of our minds too, we're praying about this, we're praying for peace, as Our Lady asked for. Again, you might hear some chatter in the Catholic blogosphere and Catholic Twitter, wherever, oh, the consecration of Russia wasn't done right. JP2 didn't do it right. Hogwash. Sister Lucia said it herself. He did it right. She had continuing conversations with Our Lady while she was alive. So if anybody would know, she would know. So that's not something that we have to sweat on this front. But we do have to keep praying, obviously. We still have to keep praying for this situation because it's very tense. There's a lot at stake. But Our Lady has come through before with her intercession. It's going to happen again. And that's what we're doing today on Relevant Radio. This is a day of prayer for peace. So if you have a take on this, a reaction to this, you can call in right now, 888-914-9149. Got to take a quick break right now on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. We'll be right back with your phone calls after this. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the program. 888-914-9149 is the toll-free line to call in to talk to me. Maybe you want to react to what we were saying just before the break, that the consecration to Russia, to the Immaculate Heart of Mary, which Our Lady of Fatima had specifically asked for. A lot of people have wondered, did JP II do it right? Did Pope John Paul II do it correctly? And the answer is yes. Sister Lucia herself, one of the Fatima visionaries, she confirmed that he did do it right. She had ongoing private revelations from Our Lady throughout her life. They are private revelations, to be sure, but she said to Cardinal Bertone, Vatican Secretary of State at the time, that yes, he did it correctly. It fulfilled Our Lady's wishes. So as we contemplate what's going on with Russia and the Ukraine, as we ask Our Lady to intercede for peace, as we pray the rosary together, as we will do later tonight, the Family Rosary Across America with Father Rocky here on Relevant Radio, keep that in mind. So if you hear any chatter about the consecration to Russia, don't worry, it was legit. We're going to go to the phones right now. Miriam is calling from Wisconsin. Hello, Miriam.
Hello there, Cale, and thank you very much for what you do. I really always enjoy your show.
Thanks.
Today, we kind of disagree, and only in that we not only do we not have to believe private revelation, but we don't have to believe what Lucia or Bishop Bertone said about the private revelation. So I think that's about it. We should just follow the Catholic Christian faith and pray for good judgment and continue on.
Well, thank you very much, Miriam, for calling in. And your name, Miriam, of course, a lovely name. That's Mary's name, of course. Providential. Yeah. We're talking about Mary here. And I certainly won't disagree with you, Miriam, about what you said about private revelation. As Catholics, we are not bound to believe any private revelations. We only have to believe public revelation of the Church. And that's what the word Catholic is all about. It's universal. It's for everyone. The Catholic Church is not a secret cult. There were many of those, even in the early church, in the days of the early church. There are many little groups like the Gnostics and other groups that had their own little teachings, and they said, no, we've got the real truth about Jesus. You've got to come over and join us, and once you're initiated, we'll tell you the truth. Well, that's not what went on here with the Catholic Church. This is public revelation. This all happened in public. As the New Testament says about the crucifixion of Jesus, this was not done in a corner, you know, in a galaxy a long, long time ago, very far away. This happened in public for all to see, public revelation through the life, death, burial, resurrection of Jesus Christ. And so there's no secrets in the Catholic Church. It's all open. You can read the catechism. It's all out there. That's what you have to believe. The public teachings of the Church, public revelation, scripture, sacred tradition, the dogmas of the Church, everybody knows what they are. Now, the private revelations, the Church says that there are some private revelations that are worthy of belief, and that they don't say have to believe them, but they do say, hey, they're orthodox, they don't conflict with the faith in any way. Do I think they're legit? I certainly do believe that many of them happen, especially Guadalupe, Fatima, Lourdes, some of the big Marian revelations. I think now if somebody says I don't buy any of them, that's fine. You can still be a good Catholic without it. Oddly enough, a lot of people don't know this, and I'm not encouraging this by any stretch of the imagination. If you don't even like to pray the rosary, you could actually be a good Catholic. You could be a Catholic in good standing and not ever pray the rosary. Now, I think you should pray the rosary. The popes have all encouraged it. Of course, Our Lady of Fatima did encourage it too. I think it's a good thing, but what we have to believe is the public teaching of the church. Now, so, and I do appreciate your call, Miriam. Thank you so much for calling. It was Miriam calling from Wisconsin. Now, when Miriam said, you don't even have to believe what Sister Lucia herself said about the private revelation, well, I don't know on what grounds you would doubt her on that, but obviously private revelations are not something that you necessarily agree with anyway. So I guess in that sense, it's kind of a moot point. But like I said before, if anybody would know about the Fatima situation, it would be her. She was right in the middle of it. So I don't see any reason to doubt her on that. We're going to go back to the phones right now. But thank you for your kind words, Miriam, and thank you for listening. I do appreciate you. Call back anytime. Paul, who is one of our Orthodox listeners, is calling from Youngstown, Ohio in the U.S. And Paul, you obviously probably have a perspective on this, seeing as how we did mention the Orthodox Church of Russia in the discussion that we had about Fatima.
Well, yes, I just wanted to mention I had watched a video a while back with an Orthodox priest from California, and mm-hmm. he had been working with the International Society of Families, and he went to Portugal and became friends with a man named Dom Duarte Pio. Not sure if he was related to Padre Pio or not, but he was at that time the titular king of Portugal.
Okay.
And they discussed Fatima, and Father Josiah had mentioned he didn't really see Russia converting to Catholicism. And Dom Duarte Pio said, oh, I know something about this. I had spoken with Sister Lucia when she was still alive. And he said, does the conversion of Russia mean that Russia becomes a Catholic country or that it returns to its Orthodox faith? And Sister Lucia said, as she understood it, it meant they would return to their Orthodox faith.
Okay. Yeah, I can't really comment on that. I'm not familiar at all with what you're referencing there. So, but I do thank you for sharing that, Paul, and thank you for calling in. Thank you for listening, as always. One of the things that was mentioned that I thought was fascinating in this conversation between Cardinal Bertone and the author of this sort of book-length interview with him, and again, his name is Giuseppe De Carli, and the book was called, by the way, The Last Secret of Fatima, if you want to read it. It's an interesting read. He talked about a guy who was a Czech bishop by the name of Pavel, and I'm going to probably mess up the pronunciation of his last name, Hnilka. The Czech bishop Pavel Hnilka. So if I butchered that name, please forgive me. He met with the Pope sometime before March the 25th, 1984, when he made this entrustment of the world, including Russia, to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. And this Czech bishop, he actually performed this rite of consecration of Russia to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. He actually apparently did it in secret in Russia, actually inside the Kremlin, if you can imagine this. So I've never heard this story before. He was ordained to the priesthood in secret, and he was made a bishop also in secret. And he started secretly ordaining priests, including Jan Korec, who became the Archbishop of Nitra, which is in Slovakia, also became a cardinal. And Bishop Pavel, Hnilka, he was also really close friends with Sister Lucia and also, incidentally, with Mother Teresa, St. Mother Teresa of Calcutta. He died in October of 2006, and apparently his life read like a spy thriller. It was better than a Bourne trilogy novel or something. So it's unbelievable. In 1983 and 1984, and of course 1984 was the year that the Sister Lucia said this was the entrustment to Mary that worked really well. It's legit. Those were really crucial years for negotiations and political dealings between the Soviet Union and the West. In fact, Russia had suspended negotiations about the control of medium-range nuclear missiles. Yuri Andropov passed away. His successor, Viktor Chernenko, he died also just a few months after the 1984 Act of Entrustment. But the Soviet Union was kind of in a weak position on the Euro-Atlantic chessboard, as it were. And obviously, Sister Lucia, she didn't know necessarily about all these things. She was a cloistered nun. She didn't read the military journals. She didn't have a hotline to President Ronald Reagan. She wasn't a spy or anything like that. But this is one of the stories, one of the figures that was discussed in the book. And I found this to be quite fascinating. And Colonel Bertone said that although he did not know the contents of the envelope that Sister Lucia gave Pope John Paul II, he did know about the late Bishop Henilica. I think I've said that name about three different times, so I apologize. He had an incredibly exciting life in service of the church. But of course, that was a whole decade. The 1980s was filled with a lot of surprises for the world, things that people never thought would happen. The fall of the Berlin Wall on November the 9th, 1989. On Christmas Day, 1991, the red flag was lowered for the last time at the Kremlin, the highest pinnacle of the Kremlin. And so in terms of the piety of the Russian people, what happened after that, after communism fell? Cardinal Bertone said it was like the faith reemerging from the catacombs in Russia. The Slavic Pope, Pope John Paul II, he respected the independence of the Russian people, and when the Soviet Union crumbled, it was really the young people of the Soviet Union at the time. They were the ones pouring into the streets. They would bring out the icons, the holy icons that were they had to keep hidden under the atheistic regime for so many decades, hidden in their closets, hidden in their basements, in the cellar. They were pouring into the streets, proudly showing off their icons of Our Lady, Our Lord. And so there was a lot of devotion to Mary within Russia. And so that's a question I really can't answer, Paul, in terms of, you know, whether the end game was Russia's conversion to Catholicism. I do think that union with the Pope, obviously, is what God willed for his church all around the world. And so on that level, in a general sense, I'd have to say that was definitely part of it. But thanks for the call, Paul. And it's certainly a topic, like I said, that's been on the tip of the tongue, at the top of our minds over the last few days. And so let's keep praying. That's the real answer here. We've got to keep praying, something Our Lady encouraged, and so many miracles can be wrought through prayer. We got to take another quick break right now on the Cale Clark Show, but when we come back, today is also the second year, the two-year anniversary of the tragic passing of NBA superstar Kobe Bryant, several other people on a helicopter that crashed on the outskirts of Los Angeles, including Kobe's 13-year-old daughter, Gianna. What a tragedy. A lot of people are not aware of Kobe's Catholic faith, something that came to the forefront after he died, the struggle that he had internally. We're going to tell you about that after this break. 888-914-9149. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the program. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. And we're talking about Our Lady's intercession on this day of prayer for peace for the Russia-Ukraine situation. And we can receive a lot of miracles in our lives through Mary's intercession. And that's why Relevant Radio, we have a whole year dedicated to this theme. It's called Miracles, Mysteries, and Mary. Now, just like we had a year dedicated to St. Joseph in 2021, this year it's a special time to celebrate Our Lady with miracles, mysteries, and of course, Mary herself. So we're going to find really creative ways to share with you Mary's involvement in human history. Our Lady of Fatima would be a prime example of that, and in our lives every day. So you can grow in faith, knowledge, and devotion through these lessons that we're going to give you from Our Lady. Now, this is a free program that you can take part in, and all you've got to do is go to relevantradio.com/Mary, relevantradio.com/Mary. You can get access to the email series. You can sign up for that. And there's going to be exclusive content that we're going to be sharing throughout the year with you if you sign up. So once again, go to relevantradio.com/Mary. As I said just before the break, I can't believe that it's been 2 years since the tragic events of this day in the year 2020. It was kicking off the start of what proved to be a very stressful year for a lot of people, the pandemic, and this was not a good harbinger of things that were to come. On January the 26th, 2020, basketball legend Kobe Bryant, his 13-year-old daughter Gianna, or Gigi as she was known, and seven others, and all of their lives were obviously equally as valuable in God's sight, perished in a helicopter crash. It was a Sunday morning. It shocked the world, dominated headlines. And I wrote about this. I reflected on this in an article that I wrote shortly after this tragic event. And we'll put a link to it in the show notes. I also posted on my Twitter account, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. You can follow me on Twitter there. And I actually didn't even know it was the anniversary today. I got up and I checked my messages, and there was a lot of chatter on Twitter about the anniversary of Kobe's passing. And just looking at the photographs, especially that people were posting of Kobe and his daughter Gigi, they had a really, really close relationship, a beautiful father-daughter bond. And being a hashtag girl dad myself, it really, I don't know, for some reason, it just hit me really hard this morning. I was kind of a mess, to be honest with you, emotionally looking at this and remembering this. And I know we have a lot of listeners on the West Coast in Los Angeles, big Laker fans, and I know that you're thinking about this today as well. And really for a generation of NBA fans, Kobe was kind of their Michael Jordan. He was the brightest star of his era. He was an 18-time All-Star, 5-time world champion with the Lakers, the only team he ever played for. It's so rare that happens these days, the Lakers. And Jerry West, and he actually, I haven't read it yet, but Jerry West was interviewed for the New York Times about this today as well, about his recollections of the day 2 years ago and how sad he was. He said he was in tears the entire day. Jerry West was the logo, you know, the NBA logo is obviously modeled after Jerry West, the player, and as a Lakers executive, he was the guy who brokered that trade, that draft day trade that brought, at the time, he was 17 years old, Kobe Bryant to the Lakers. He was originally drafted by the Hornets. They were able to swing that trade for Vlade Divac. And he called it he said it was like the death of a son when Kobe passed away, because he got to know him when he was basically a kid, and he saw him grow and start his own family and become this sort of international icon. And 7 months before he died, his youngest daughter was only 7 months old when Kobe passed away. And he took great pride in being a girl dad. He championed their ambitions. Gigi was a great basketball player in her own right. She probably would have played in the WNBA. I mean, if Kobe's your dad, he's going to teach you a few things. And she wanted to go to UConn, play for that famous college program at the NCAA level, the UConn Huskies. So Kobe and Gigi would often be photographed sitting together courtside at WNBA games in Los Angeles, the LA Sparks games. And he would kind of be going over the fine details of the sport with her. And Kobe's widow, Vanessa, gave a moving tribute, along with Elle Duncan from ESPN, about how much Kobe loved his daughters. Check this out.
Kobe was the MVP of girl dads. He taught them how to be brave and how to keep pushing forward when things get tough. He would sing them silly songs and continue making them laugh. He loved being Gianna's basketball coach.
Our youngest Gianna is 12, and she's practicing playing basketball every single day.
One dribble step back, that should be labeled unfair.
I asked if he wanted more children, and without hesitation, he said I would have 5 more girls if I could.
Come on.
I'm a girl dad.
Good girl.
If I had the power to turn back time, I would never use it. Think about it, because then every moment that you go through means absolutely nothing, because you can always go back and do it again. So it loses its flavor, it loses its beauty. When things are final, you know, moments won't ever come again.
I can't believe it's come to an end. to my family.
Oh my God. Very merry birthday to you.
Thank you guys for all your sacrifice. You guys will always be in my heart.
All right. Like I said, those are the moments that kind of get me choked up, just seeing pictures of Kobe with his family and how much he loved his kids. And he was on a journey throughout his life. And there were obviously areas of great light in his life, but also some areas of shadow as well. We all are probably aware that part of Kobe's history, his legacy, you can't really talk about the guy in his totality without mentioning, at least in passing, the events that occurred in 2003 in Eagle County, Colorado, when Bryant, who was married to Vanessa at the time, he was already married, but he was accused of sexually assaulting a female employee of a resort where he was staying in Colorado. He was rehabbing a knee. He was recovering from an injury. The troubling details of this whole case, that the botched handling of the legal court case by officials, they've been pretty well documented. A lot of terrible missteps happened, including the release of the accuser's name in public. But the criminal case itself was actually dropped after Bryant's accuser refused to testify. There was a settlement that was reached out of court, a non-disclosure agreement. There was a civil lawsuit that had been filed. And obviously you'd have to think that there was a significant monetary component to that. But and Kobe had actually taken the very unusual step. This is really not done on the regular, of issuing a public apology to the woman after the criminal proceedings were dismissed. And I don't think that those events of Kobe's life should be glossed over in any way. However, I think we do have to say that the eternal verdict on a person's life, and of course only Almighty God can adjudicate that, that has to take into account the totality of one's life choices, the sincerity of your repentance. Any sin can be forgiven, clearly, if someone actually repents. And that's played out over a lifetime. As St. Jose Maria used to say all the time, love is deeds and not sweet words. Now, obviously, only God knew the state of Kobe's soul at the moment of his death and that of his daughter and those others that died in that helicopter crash 2 years ago today. Not a lot of people knew that Kobe was actually a Catholic. That came out after he died. In fact, that morning, that Sunday morning that the helicopter crashed, and there's so many little twists and turns, too. The Los Angeles Times published sort of a timeline of the day and the night before. And in fact, Kobe had actually changed the time of the flight. It was supposed to be later. And maybe some of that fog would have burned off the bad weather. The pilot obviously couldn't see when he crashed the helicopter. Would that have changed anything? You can always play those what-if games. But that last Sunday morning of his life, actually, Kobe was seen praying in his home parish, Our Lady Queen of Angels in Newport Beach, California, just before that fateful helicopter ride. And he was taking his daughter and some others to a youth basketball event. And after the accident, all kinds of anecdotes began pouring in social media, on Twitter, about how people would see him very often at daily mass in the Los Angeles area. And he tried to be as inconspicuous as he could. That's pretty tough to do when you're 6'6", you're a world famous personality. But he didn't want to draw undue attention to himself. He wanted the attention to be the action on the altar up front. So he would slip into a back pew and just try to, you know, quietly pray. And back in 2015, Kobe actually gave a very interesting interview in GQ magazine to the writer Chuck Klosterman. And he talked about receiving encouragement from a priest in his struggle to rebuild his marriage after the events of Eagle, Colorado in 2003. And obviously, Vanessa did stay with him. They did separate for a time. But Klosterman, when he was interviewing Kobe, he noted that his legendary work ethic, his competitiveness, that actually gave him an advantage in fighting to keep his family intact throughout the years. And here's a quote from Chuck Klosterman from that article. He said, in 2011, Bryant's wife Vanessa filed for divorce, citing irreconcilable differences. Yet those differences were reconciled 13 months later. They remain a married couple. I'm not going to say our marriage is perfect by any stretch of the imagination, Kobe says. We still fight just like every married couple. But, you know, my reputation as an athlete is that I'm extremely determined and that I will work my blank off. Okay, I had to bleep that out. How could I do that in my professional life if I wasn't like that in my personal life? When it affects my kids, it wouldn't make any sense. End of quote. And as Klosterman noted, the logic is weirdly airtight. If we concede that Kobe would practically kill himself to beat the Celtics, we must assume he'd be equally insane about trying to keep his family together. And of course, his love for his family and especially his daughters was very well known. Was he perfect? No, by his own admission. And there are obviously shades of gray in our own lives as well. I think you and I would probably be aghast if the contents of our confessions over the years were exposed publicly for all to see on social media. No. We're not perfect either. Was the loss of his life or that of his daughter any more tragic than the loss of the other 8 souls who perished that Sunday morning 2 years ago? No. Was he striving to be a good Catholic? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But I'm hopeful, given that after his passing, a lot of SoCal bishops and priests said a lot of positive things about his quiet piety. And obviously, it should go without saying that the Catholic faith is not any more or less credible because Bryant was an adherent. He was a member of the family. But I do know this. We Catholics believe in forgiveness, even for those who may have committed very grave sins, provided, of course, that they repent. Jesus died for all of us, even though he foreknew the vast and bleak panorama of sin of which all the human race stands guilty. Think about King David. Think about King David, the man after God's own heart, God's chosen instrument. Not only did he commit adultery with Bathsheba, but he subsequently orchestrated the murder of her husband Uriah. The whole cover-up was far worse than the crime, and another grave sin was added on top of it, that of murder. Now, despite David's dastardly deeds, the prophet Nathan was able to get him to repent. And David was able to do that. There was a cost to his sin, clearly, but he moved forward in his journey toward God. And he eventually became what God had originally destined for him to be, a man after God's own heart. And so when I heard about Bryant's determination to fight to keep his family intact, it makes me hopeful that he wanted the same thing, that he was also looking to please God. But we do know this. His journey to eternity is complete. We have to pray for the repose of his soul, along with the soul of his daughter Gigi, those others whose earthly stories also have ended. We didn't get to see Kobe's second act in life. And Jerry West was going to talk about that in the New York Times today. He thought that his second act was going to be far more impressive than his first. And just in the short few days after he had retired from basketball, he had directed an Oscar-nominated short film. He had written a children's book, tried to accomplish a lot of other things, and it might have been more compelling than his basketball career. We'll never know. We'll never know. It would have been certainly inspiring to see him continue to strive to be as great a father as he was a basketball player. It's incredibly tragic that his 3 surviving children have been left without a dad, his wife Vanessa without a husband. She's had some ongoing legal struggles with, you know, unfortunately, some police officers shared photos of the crash site with their friends and on social media. I don't even know what to say about that. I can't believe that anyone would do such a thing. But she hasn't had an easy time of it either. And so I think at the end of the day, we all have to strive to remain in a state of grace ourselves. We've got to get to confession when we need to go. That's how we can win in the spiritual battle. We win when we confess that at times we've lost. We win by losing. Kobe's story is kind of a reminder that you never know how many seconds are left on the clock in this world. So St. Paul, obviously, he was a guy who used a lot of sports analogies, a lot of sports metaphors from his time in his writings. He talked about running the race. He talked about fighting the good fight. St. Paul might say this: let's play the game of life in order to win. And for us, that means nothing less than becoming saints, the best version of ourselves. Kobe himself, some of his Lakers teammates weren't exactly as committed as he was all the time, or as hardworking as he was all the time. And he once asked them, if you're not here to win, why are you here? And we could ask the same question of ourselves. We've got to be in the Catholic faith to win. As St. Paul says, run in such a way as if to win. We're trying to become saints. Can't do it without God's help, but we have to turn to Him for that help. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. And producer Lucas, it was one of those days where people know exactly where they were when they heard the news. I can't believe how quickly time flies. It's been 2 years already, but it's just a sobering reminder that one never knows. And that was interesting, Kobe's words in that little clip that you played, Lucas. Mm-hmm. If he could do everything over again, he actually wouldn't do it. He wouldn't want to change anything because then he kind of missed the lessons. He missed the beauty of the moment. I thought that was kind of an interesting insight.
Yeah, it's, you know, we have an opportunity to make an impact in this world, and we may have made mistakes, but sometimes God, all the time, can make beautiful things out of broken things, and that's what makes life meaningful. Yeah.
Beauty for ashes. Thanks for joining us on the Catholic Show. It's not the Catholic Show, it's the Cale Clark Show. Hopefully it's the Catholic Show, too. We'll see you tomorrow. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.